Welcome, witches, to another episode of Hex Rated. I'm Blackbird, and along with my good friend Scarlet tonight, we are going to be talking about more Hecate. I know, but this is a really good one because we talk about what is called the magical voices and the true names, which is just super rad. I think you're going to like it. I know I learned a lot from this section of the class, and we can't wait to share it with you. So please enjoy. And as always, thank you for listening.
I put a spell on you because you're mine. Better stop the things you do. I ain't lying.
Do you?
What's up, motherfucker?
Is it your new summer jam? As opposed to
it might be.
Oh shit. I guess I better write more words than just what. Actually, we don't have to. It could just
we
be a whole song. What's up, motherfucker? Welcome to week 463 of Hecate.
This is X-rated, where we do all Hecate all the time.
All Hecate all the time. I know you're down with it. I am Blackbird.
I'm Scarlet.
And it is still Hex-rated. All right. So do you want to just jump in, or do we have any corners to explore today?
Ooh, I have a corrections corner, actually.
Oh, shit.
A few episodes back, I was talking about the webcomic Lore Olympus, and I was talking about her depiction of some of the Titans, and I confused the visual appearance of Styx and Nyx. Nyx is depicted as dark blue with multiple eyes and bitey teeth.
Ooh.
And Styx is actually pictured as gray in color with long flowing hair that flows into a river, and she's depicted as kind of being like wet and drippy.
Wow.
So I misspoke. I was describing Nyx and I was talking about Styx, but it is actually the other way around.
I'm guessing that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I would have never caught that. I have no corners. Except the baby birds keep getting bigger. That is my corner, bird corner.
And by baby birds, we are referring to Milagros and Frijoles.
Yes, and I will be sure to eventually pick the derpy one. I think the derpy one's going to be the one that's still like under Mama. Like, cause it's,
that's
you
a
know,
few days younger.
Yeah, it's a few days younger. It's kind of not ready for the world yet, Sheila. So, you know, it's just kind of like hanging out, not wanting to face the real world. So, ergo, frijoles. All right. Okay. Let's just... Oh, I do have... Wait, I have lotion corner.
Lotion corner.
I have all of these amazing... essential oils that I was not coerced at all to buy by one of our mutual friends' friends. I was not coerced. I bought them of my own free will. I did not succumb to the multi-level marketing scheme that is apparent. But what I do have is cassia, which cassia
don't put
is,
it on your skin. It'll
well,
burn.
You can. You can put it in lotion.
Oh, you can?
Well, dilute it heavily. So what I did was I had... just regular old Lubriderm, and I put it in one of those little travel bottles, and then I put about like 4 drops of cassia in. Now I have made the mistake before of trying to take a magical bath with cassia in it. That was a mistake because I think I put probably
many drops, like probably 15 or 20. And as soon as I got out of that bath, I mean, my skin was just like red all over, like burning. It was not a good time, if you know what I mean, in the garden region of my womanhood. It was...
That was so deeply elegant.
So poetic.
But also so profoundly goofy.
Yes. Well, it was quite stingy. And I said to myself, I probably should never put Cassie on my skin again. I was like, I'm going to try it for the gods, right? Just for the gods, I'm going to try it. So I made this lotion, and I will say it was a little, it was more like a zing, which is kind of thrilling. It wasn't like Bernie or like it wasn't bad is what I'm trying to say. But I think it's like so little to X amount of lotion that it's okay. So
yeah, because I know cassia smells like cinnamon. I don't know how closely related it is.
It is cinnamon because it's not Ceylon, but it is a type of cinnamon. Yes.
Yeah, it is. It is the bark of a evergreen tree. So yes. It is cinnamon-ish.
It is the cinnamon that you normally get in when you buy just fucking regular old cinnamon. When you get Chinese cinnamon, that is Ceylon, which is like considered like, I guess, true or pure cinnamon. I don't know. I read all about this shit. Basically, what I wanted to find out is what were they using in antiquity? And there is a good chance that it would have been cassia. So, hooray.
Oh.
Which is good because the cinnamon bark essential oil is like $50. So.
Oh, can I tell you, I manifested myself a big old jar of cinnamon.
Oh, so, shit. Tell me
about
it.
Yeah, because as we've mentioned, Jack Grail recommends dusting your hands with cinnamon as a purification or cleansing ritual.
The gods love cinnamon.
But it also smells great and is just fucking magical and weird, and I love it.
Yes.
So, and plus I fucking love cinnamon.
I mean, I'll eat cinnamon on anything. Yeah.
And so anyway, I had this nice, like, little glass jar of cinnamon on my spice rack, and I use a lot of it, but it's still a little goes a long way, so it takes a long time to get through all these, like, jars of spice, but I noticed I was, like, really down to the last little crumbs in the bottom, and I was like, oh, shit, I need to go get some cinnamon, and I was like, oh, I bet the Lebanese grocery store across the street has some, but then... I was cooking and I found like I had passed me from months and months and maybe years ago, who even knows, bought a big jumbo container of it from the Lebanese grocery store.
Hell yeah.
And present time me found it. And I was like, thanks, past me.
Oh my God.
I didn't even know I had this. I don't remember buying it. It's just here.
You don't remember it at all.
Nope, I just thought about how I needed to go get some, and then I found some in my house.
That's fucking amazing. That
manifesting cinnamon.
That is witchcraft, my friends. your past self thinking about your future self. That's what it is.
There you go.
Bling, bling, bing, bong, bing, bang, boom. Bing, bong, boom.
Bling, bang, blong.
Bing, blong, blong. That's amazing. Blur, blur, blur. I want to manifest some shit. Okay, well, I'm going to work on that, yes.
What we just said sounds suspiciously like the magical name of Hecate.
Bling, blang, blong?
Which, yeah, bling, blong, blar, blar.
No, it doesn't.
It is euphorba, forba, forboro, forba, forbor, 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 borbor, fora, eforbor, forbiao, forbor, forbor, boroff, forfor, bor, forbor.
Yeah. Bing, bang, boom.
That is bing, bang, blong, bling, blong.
That is the, well, according to Mr. Jack, our new best friend, he thinks that this is the true name of Hecate, and the thing is, and I wrote this down because it was very memorable, he said basically there's no reference to Hecate like directly that is her true name, but it is a series of a string of names that happens in during invocations to Hecate. So
yes, in several sources.
Yes.
But so, let's back up.
Yeah, back up to those words again.
What is a magical name? What are yeah. barbarous tongues?
Let's back all the way up.
Yeah. Back way up.
Way the fuck up. Bring that bass. What? Bring that beep. Bass. Bring that beep. Bass back. Or that ass. Or that bus. Bring it back. I'm tired. All right. So, yeah, I want you to talk about this because I'm pretty sure you're going to be more eloquent about it than I would. So
you might be surprised.
Take it away.
So where we left off last time was this last lecture series in the Hail Hecate series is about compelling the gods. So you've summoned them. You've done this sorceress devotion. You've spoken the epithets. And now the god has appeared and you are trying to compel them to help you with some kind of endeavor.
Right.
And so as part of this, going back to the PGM, Greek Magic Papyri, and this isn't unique to this system of magic, although that is what we're talking about specifically, is the idea of basically in antiquity, it would have been called quote unquote barbarous tongues, which is basically strings of words that do not have any inherent meaning, that are just meant to sound foreign and weird and magical. So just like how we have abracadabra or hocus pocus, things that in English do not have any meaning or translation, and may or may not derive from actual words in another language, but do not bear any resemblance to them anymore. These barbarous tongues or magical voices or true names of gods are meant to be these strings of syllables that you say that are just pure sound that kind of operate on a different level. And you can find them in various grimoires. You know, your mileage may vary on if you think that they're just shit that somebody made up, that right. they're like, I don't know, this sounds like Greek to a non-Greek speaking audience, or this sounds like ancient Egyptian to an audience that does, you know, right. they could just be nonsense words, or there could be some deeper meaning to them. If you do any kind of work with like mantras or chanting, I can definitely attest to the fact that there is something about making like, these sounds yeah. and just focusing on sound and right. getting your mouth to like form the word devoid of meaning.
Right.
Except in the way that you're delivering it, because obviously you want to deliver it with some kind of intentional tone, you know, but not a linguistic meaning.
Correct.
And we were talking a lot about this last time about singing, or the belief that Egyptians had that speaking a word aloud like gives it its own life. And I love that. I mean, that yeah. totally speaks to me.
Same.
So the idea that the physical process of uttering these sounds has some kind of transformational or magical property just in the act itself, which checks out to me personally, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And he also notes that string that you just uttered, that is supposedly possibly her true name, sounds like at the end and kind of during the whole thing, sounds like dogs barking.
Yes, it is a very bow wow wow sound.
Bora four four bora four bora four bora four bora. Right. Right.
A shorter version is for forba baobo forbora forba forba brimo ezeabia. Now, there's two words in there that are things. Actual epithets of Hecate. So this for forba forbora, all of those symbols or syllables are pretty much just kind of like nonsense words, like
right.
But Baobo is a goddess. She's a character in the Demeter and Persephone story.
Mm.
And she's sort of like a folk god, a sort of Shilanagig type figure who makes Demeter laugh by lifting up her skirts and flashing her fanny. Funny. Classic.
Yeah.
And then Brimo is another epithet of Hecate. So, you know, just the way that, like, in Renaissance magic, like, there's a lot of the tetragrammaton, like the different pronunciations of the Hebrew letters of the name of Yahweh or Jehovah or
right.
whatever. So,
oh my, look, did you see the one for Apollo? This one is amazing. I want you to do it.
Okay.
Get ready, everyone. So I'm reading that and I'm listening to it and I'm thinking the vibration with that is so high. It's completely the opposite of Forbore, you know, like it's a completely different, I don't know, just the air is different.
It's all vowels, like, and it's right. a lot of E. Like, almost yes. all of these are start with, like, an iota.
I or an E, yeah.
So, and there's three vowels, and I'm mispronounced. This was not pronounced perfectly.
Right, no.
Spoiler it's alert. It's, but, it's really okay. Because there is iota, epsilon, and eta. They all are, it's I, E, and E.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also R, A, and O, Omicron. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, yes, but they're so different. And I could see this one as being more ululating. So like, like, to me, it's more sing-songy.
Yeah,
it probably
for
should,
sure.
be, should have presented like that.
Yeah.
You could see it as like a very lilting, like
it seems so bright, just like
yeah,
Apollo.
Yeah, like the sun.
Yeah, yeah. I think it, yeah.
And he is the god of music after all, so having it be sort of this uplifting, celebratory sounding,
yes,
song like chant, whereas the names of Hecate are much more plosive because you've got yeah. the f sound and b, which yep. are both like p, like you literally have to like blow out air to make the sound and like roll your lips in
right.
and pop them out. So it's very plosive. That's literally what those sounds are called in a grammatical sense. So
correct.
But I agree with his theory that it may be meant to be onomatopoetic and be like a bow wow wow barking
right.
sound.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me too.
So, and it feels fun to say. And it yeah. feel like I would like to get more practiced at doing these. I might use the shorter one, the forba, bow, bow, forbora, and get
yeah.
really practiced with it because getting really aggressive with it and like really like popping those sounds and like
yeah.
really breathing out hard, I think would feel really good. I think it would feel really cathartic to be like forba baobo forbora like
borof for like, for yeah like it
yeah,
feels so
really like growl it out and like have it be big.
Yeah, and it feels
but
really
I love that you
powerful.
Had me compare it to the Apollo one because they are super, super different and I didn't really think about that.
But I love them both though. Like those out of the ones that are listed here, those are my favorites and imagine that. I thought it was fascinating. And then he talks a lot about Maskelli and Maskello and how nobody really knows what that means. Do you remember that part?
Yeah.
Want to talk about that part?
I tend to get really caught up on trying to figure out like what the etymology of these are.
I bet. And yeah.
I need to let go of that because some of them are really meant to just be sounds. Pure sounds.
Yeah.
Some of them, of course, like part of that. This is the formula that invokes bitter necessity. So miskele, miskelo. But part of it, like ipo hithon, means like horse of the earth.
Yes.
So, rechithon is like earth shaker, earth destroyer. So, right. So some of these things are Greek titles or epithets, but a bunch of them are nonsense words.
Right.
And I feel like the challenge to me personally is to just let go and let it be sounds.
Yep.
And
but you work with mantras, so you should be able to.
Yeah, but because some of those are actual Sanskrit words.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's the concept of seed syllables, and those have meanings that are layered onto them.
Mm-hmm.
But those are things that are kind of added later.
Okay.
That, you know, like om. Like,
yeah.
You can kind of translate meaning into it, but one, you would have to write a paragraph to even start to define what it means as like a linguistic word.
Mm, yeah.
And some of those are sort of just poetic meditations on the sound, as opposed to like, you're not literally translating this syllable as an actual word per se.
Right.
So yeah, but he points out, he's like, these aren't meant to be a literal message. The literal message part is the actual verse or invocation that is happening before and after these series of syllables. Like, there will be an actual spell or whatever that is made of like linguistic elements that make a sentence that makes sense.
Right.
And so that kind of helped me reel it back a little bit.
Yeah.
The other thing that he pointed out, which I get and I felt, it's just very hard for me to let go of and just let this process happen. Mm. But he was saying that the logical part of your brain is you turn it off by saying these nonsense, quote unquote, words.
Yes.
And he uses the phrase sub-rational.
Ooh.
And I love that because a lot of magic operates on a sub-rational or unconscious or subconscious level. And it's sort of like, you know, when you're a little kid and you repeat a word over and over and over and over and it like loses its meaning.
Yes.
I think that is like a very powerful process. Like, it's subverting the normal pathway that our brain is taking of connecting sound and letters and meaning in a linguistic sense. And it's doing it backwards. I think that's a really powerful tool. And I think even for those few seconds where something ceases to have meaning, is a very powerful magical moment. And I think that like when you're in that state, just for those few seconds, you can really do some magic. Or you can really program things into your consciousness that are operating on are not how your rational mind or your conscious mind. And those, sorry, my conscious mind is now speaking nonsense.
Obliterated.
My word bucket is blah, 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 blah.
That makes sense to me. And it also makes me think about, you know how you sometimes will pick a word, just any random word, and all of a sudden you're just like, this word is so weird. What is this word? Why do we say this word this way? You know, like, I'll get stuck on words like house and be like, I don't, you know, if I don't think about where it came from, the linguistic, like, etymology, if I don't think about that and just think about how the word sounds, like, that's like a word with actual meaning that you're breaking down into just the sound and finding it weird. And the reverse is true, where you're breaking sounds down to where they don't have meaning. You're just using them as a device And right, like it's operating on a completely different level. I don't know where I was going with that, but I just does that ever happen to you? Like you have a word and you're just like, it's weird, and you just like
I get words or phrases in my head the way that I also get like songs in my head. And I was saying that to my husband. I was like, you know how sometimes you get like a word stuck in your head, and he was like, no,
like I do.
What? You know what I get in my head a lot? Not a lot, but more than is normal.
Right.
Krebs cycle, which is...
What?
It is Krebs a process cycle. By which mitochondria, like, convert energy
Do
in your
Do you
cell.
Have a reason to use that word often?
No, I haven't actually ever used this word in its context since I was in 11th grade in biology class.
I like how you know exactly when you used it last.
Yeah, I haven't spoken it aloud except to be like, this phrase is in my head.
Wow.
That's
pretty amazing because I'm over here being real derpy with house. House sounds
really...
weird to me.
House, and I'm like, Krebs cycle.
It's like, fuck.
Okay, wait. Oh my god, I'm looking at a diagram of it, and I don't even know what any
god.
Of this shit
Why?
Means. It is the citric acid cycle, also known as the Krebs cycle. It's a series of chemical reactions to release the stored energy through the oxidation of acetyl-CoA derived from carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. The Krebs cycle is used by organisms that respire as opposed to organisms that ferment to generate energy.
Dude, you lost me about four words in. All right. That sounds pretty amazing. But
so speaking of words that have no meaning.
I like the fact that that's the word that gets stuck in your head. That's pretty impressive.
I mean, I wouldn't say it happens a lot. I think the fact that it's happened more than once is a lot.
That's true. That is true. Right. So I get phrases like that. I get phrases stuck. Either way, I think the point is all of these words like look vaguely Greek or possibly Greek, but I think they are just like mnemonic devices.
Yeah. And I think that definitely for them to be spoken aloud is how they work because
Yeah, just reading it on the page doesn't really do anything for me. But when I hear you speaking it, it like the air gets different.
Oh, wow. But it's a weird quirk of how our brains work, because obviously our ability to see letters, think of what that sound is, make our mouth
and do that sound
and lungs and larynx make that sound. And then know what it's supposed to mean happens almost instantaneously.
Right.
Which is, in my opinion, fucking magic.
Absolutely.
Like, that's fucking witchcraft. That's so many complicated things that we just do automatically.
Right. We don't even think
and,
about it.
Yeah. And that's even if you're monolingual. And we're not even getting into very smart people that speak multiple languages.
Oh, my God. Right? Yeah.
So, to purposely read a bunch of syllables that aren't words is actually quite difficult because your brain wants it to make sense. Your brain wants it to be words.
Right.
And so forcing yourself to do it is like short circuiting parts of your brain. And I love that you use the word subrational. Like, it's basically tricking you into turning off that, like, conscious, editorial, literal, meaning-based, logic-based part of your brain. So it's not even the meaning of the words, quote-unquote. It's just the process of forcing yourself to do something that is non-linguistic sound.
Right.
And... That
My only,
basically
I worry
go ahead
I was gonna say I worry that, but like so if they're just nonsense words or words that are just for the sound, if I mispronounce, can you mispronounce it, and B, if you do, is it bad? Like, in your opinion, because I for sure am not gonna say half of this shit correctly.
Right. And of course, like, we're reading a transliteration from the Greek alphabet.
Right. It probably wouldn't even sound like this anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that you should definitely try to read it.
Yes.
As accurately as you can.
Yes.
But actually getting it, quote unquote, correct is not the important part. It's the process of trying to force your brain to do an activity where there's no meaning and your brain is like fighting to like
make it.
You say actual words.
Right.
And so you need to try really hard to get it right, but the actual getting it right is not the point.
Right. The trying is the point.
Yes, that would be my argument. Now, other people might be sticklers, you know, with the mantras and like Sanskrit syllables and things like that. You know, I think some people claim that certain sounds or vibrations or tones like have an actual effect like on your body or on your environment.
Right.
And that's true. I mean, you can.
Sure.
Sound waves, you know, I'm looking at it right now on my Audacity file. Like
they're hitting you.
There's a bunch of different ways to map out sounds.
Right.
And I think that matters in certain contexts. I think for the purpose of this activity, it's really more about kind of entering into this semi-hypnotic state of non-linguistic sound, of non-meaning. Or meaning that is on a level that is not normal conscious language. But all of that is to say, what we're talking about specifically is when you look at these spells in the Greek magic papyri or even medieval grimoires, things like that, you'll see these magic formulas. And like I said, they're like abracadabra or hocus pocus or something. They're basically nonsense words. But the point is they are frequently associated with specific gods. So there will be a whole spell invoking the fates or Helios or whatever. And so Jack Grail has specifically pointed out these strings of words as being not explicitly listed as Hecate's true name, quote unquote, but are he finds them repeated in references to Hecate or Hecate adjacent workings. So it is his theory that these represent true names of Hecate.
Right.
But on the other hand, like in a practical sense, like you can't. This is like how many syllables long? Like it's not a name
in
the conventional sense. It's
right.
Not like I can just rattle this off the top of my head.
Yeah. Right.
So it's not exactly a name in the conventional sense, and you wouldn't be able to speak it in a conversational way as someone's name. So
no, and this is something that I'm going to be claim ignorance on, because he probably went over this and I either missed it or just can't remember. But what is his difference, or does he say, between a name and voices? Or does he really say?
Voces Magicae is like a technical term. So he uses them kind of interchangeably.
That's what I kind of think too. Okay.
Yeah, so
okay. That makes
he also
sense.
Talks about them kind of functioning as sort of like each individual spirit is sort of like a spirit.
Okay.
And he talks about this when you're reciting the epithets of a god. He uses the analogy of like facets of a jewel. Like when
right.
you've got a jewel spinning and you're seeing all the little glints of light off of it, when you experience all of those in total, you get a sense of the luminosity of the jewel as a whole.
Right.
So as you start repeating these names, whether it's in English, you know, you're like Fardarter, you know, Lady of the Crossroads, Keeper of the Keys, Three-Faced, all these Saffron Cloaked, like titles of Hecate, or you could be saying the Greek translation, which is like Enodia, Triformis, you know, all these different, you could be reciting those. And it's basically as you are speaking these, you're getting all these little aspects of her.
Right.
All these, and he calls them like little godlets. So you're kind of creating this like linguistic faceted jewel, and they start to kind of congeal into a more a mosaic of a larger picture,
like a whole
of,
right,
and I really liked that idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. It makes it more understandable, because I think the one thing that I always struggled with is, well, how can one god or one deity have all of these different aspects? Like that was always hard as a younger person to grasp. It's like, well, how can they contain that? Because they can. But I like the jewel description the best, because, you know, you can see, if you look carefully enough, you can see all the little facets and sides. And then, but really, you pull back and you see the whole jewel, like you said.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Or conversely, you could hone in on one facet.
Right.
That can operate in and of itself.
Yes.
And focus in on that as a much smaller bite-sized piece. So right. It works both directions. It's kind of, right. It's like a fractal.
Yeah. That's super cool. Fractal.
It is super cool.
I love it.
And so I really liked his explanation of that. Like I said, for me, the challenge is to like let go of trying to
linguicize it. Linguisticize. Yes. Linguisticize.
We just made up a word.
Right on.
That's how we linguisticize.
I was going to say, we linguisticize just like that.
But I'd like to go back to his topic of compelling gods, because this is part of these late antiquity spells to summon and compel gods. But just the concept of compelling gods, because I think for a lot of people that seems sort of maybe sacrilegious. And he does a good job of explaining how it's not exactly like that. Although he does touch on the fact that sometimes, like, you read, especially in medieval grimoires and Renaissance grimoires, there's a lot of like threatening spirit you're summoning.
Yeah.
And a lot of people find that pretty distasteful. And I feel like you can kind of choose your own adventure with that. His disclaimer was like, you know, you can have your own moral qualms about that, about how you want to go about it. But the historical reality is that is part of some of these rituals.
That's what happened. Right.
So it's a thing. It was a technique that was used.
Right.
You know, you can take it or leave it, but we got to acknowledge that this was how some people used to do it.
Yep. Yeah.
But do you have any other thoughts about this idea of declaring one's godhead or putting on the god face? So basically, to compel the god, you want to get them sympathetic to you. And one of the ways to do that is either to pretend to be another god or to, in fact, like, basically, the reason why that works is the same reason that this other technique works, of claiming your own divinity.
Right. I think I will say I have never considered the idea of acting like another god, but that is pretty powerful and I'd like to try it. I think I have definitely used the second method, claiming my own divinity, maybe not in as formal of sense as we are learning it here, but definitely to interact with any deity, there is a sense of bravery. There's a sense of confidence, like you, and especially not just sorcerer's devotion, but compulsion. You have to believe in the shit you're selling. I mean, you have to believe in your ability or your right to call on this deity. So I think that's, to me, using my own or claiming myself as divine is much more accessible to me than, I think if I was going to do it, if I try this, I'm going to try it as Demeter.
Ooh, I like that.
Well, she's also another one of my patrons.
Yeah.
So
but,
that would
but
be...
I like that relationship between Agathe and, yeah, and Demeter.
Right.
That's it, because, you know, she of course helps her search for Persephone and stuff.
What would you try if you were gonna try to be another like
to talk to Hecate?
Yeah, specifically Hecate, yeah. Oh, Helios. Man. That might be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, but then Corey. You're claiming you're a Titan. Ooh. Yeah, yeah, Corey would be maybe, Corey would or... be nice.
That
would work. That
would probably be a good one.
Yep.
Or, I'd probably choose some other sort of underworld type figure, maybe. Mm. You say that you've never pretended to be a god, but we have some rituals where we either aspected,
yes,
or played the part in sort of a theatrical way, or literally like channeled and had a god speak through us. But I think the difference was that the audience was other mortals.
Right.
It wasn't aspecting or channeling a deity to speak to another deity.
Exactly. Right. So it's not quite. Yes. Right. Exactly. I haven't used this method to try and compel. So that would be something I'm really interested in doing.
The other thing that we started to talk about last episode was he suggests, because obviously it's way easier said than done to be like, hey, I'm divine, so I have a right to be calling on this god and asking you to help me with stuff.
Right.
Obviously a lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in using sorcery as opposed to mundane means, chances are you... have tried the other way, the normal like conventional methods of getting what you want.
Right.
And so if it were that easy, you would just be doing it that way. Right.
Right. Right.
So he offers a technique of wearing a mask, and he suggests it can be as simple as just getting a black piece of fabric and tying it over your eyes, like basically a blindfold, but that is your mask. And, I'm a big fan of this because one of my most beloved tenets of magic is fake it till you make it.
That's right.
I would say probably at least 60% of magic is fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Agreed. And this would definitely be a perfect example of that. And he said some interesting things that really spoke to me about masking. He said at one point that when you put on the mask, there's something that falls away, but or also something that kind of comes in.
Yeah.
And I liked both of those concepts, either something falling away or something kind of settling in, because those seem sort of like opposite directions, but I think that the feeling is sort of the same.
I think that goes back to the paradox of gods, right? I mean, that's to me the same, in the same vein. Like, so to me, the falling away would be your own persona that you are every day, or that you act with every day, and the settling in would be this new persona that you're taking on for this moment.
And I think that we're in a weird moment in time where we all have had to wear masks,
sure,
or at least most of us elected to comply with this request to wear a mask.
Yes.
And for me, it was very liberating, like, because I didn't have to worry about what bitch face I was making all the time.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it was nice to not have to worry about, like, am I smiling? Is it awkward? Like...
As one of the last
people... Do I have lipstick on my teeth? Like, whatever.
Say, as one of the last people wearing masks in public spaces, I guess. I don't know. I'm usually the only person wearing a mask anywhere I go nowadays. But, and I mean, I don't wear it 100% of the time, but I really do try. Since my husband works with the public, I certainly don't want to... If I am exposed, I certainly don't want to expose anybody else to anything that I've been exposed to. And I think I've just accepted wearing a mask as, like, part of my new reality, which to me is I'm okay with it. Like, it kind of sucks, but I'm okay with it. But I'm with you. Nobody can see what's happening. underneath my mask, and it's liberating as somebody that makes constant bitch faces all the time.
Yeah, my default face is super bitchy. I'm also actually same. Just bitchy, but
same.
You know, sometimes I don't want to lead with that. So
what's funny is when you first started talking about this, I wasn't thinking about the actual masks, like the literal masks. I was thinking about the mask we all put on to go to work, or the mask we all put on for some friends versus other friends. I was thinking about like metaphorical masks, but that, which is also to me, I don't know. I'm trying to think about how to phrase that in this whole aspect. Like, I am a different person at work than I am when I'm doing magic. And I think that's probably true. I don't know. Like, there's a part of me that wants to integrate that, right? But it's kind of hard. Like, I have to be kind of a certain type of person when I am at work with people, although I'm closer to just being myself. But there's a portion of the workplace that expects you to be on and awake and like, interest. These are the things that I have to make up because I am not. And it's way more, I think, way more. Genuine when I am not having to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that generally when we think of masks, we think of it as being false or dissembling, or that right. You are being shamed into hiding a part of yourself to
right.
make other people feel comfortable. But like, I feel like a lot of the masking I do is to withhold things from people that I don't think are like worthy of
yes.
my time and attention.
Ah.
So, you know, I am obviously much more animated and excited and making eye contact and being affectionate, like with my words and my gestures and everything with people that I like, versus somebody that's like in front of me in line at the grocery store.
Right.
And like, I don't have any desire to really befriend that person. I don't have any ill wishes to that person, but the relationship I want with that person is neutral
for them to you know? Go. Yes. Right.
I don't think either of us would enjoy me being like effusively affectionate no. in that context, right. You know? And like,
right.
I think that would be a misuse of my energy.
Right.
To do that. And
yes.
So I think it goes both ways. Like,
right.
It doesn't have to be like, oh,
a bad thing.
I don't get to be myself in this way that like somehow I'm like
censoring
well, right. myself for the benefit of others. It's like, no, sometimes I'm censoring myself for the benefit of me.
That's, you know what? That makes sense too. Because as much as if I say I want to integrate that and like, I'll be one person to everybody. I mean, like you said, sometimes some people aren't worthy. Right. Of the genuineness. So right. But I think this on some level is it's so weird, the dichotomy, because it's like you're either being super fucking genuine or not, or you're being the opposite of genuine, almost deceitful if you're actually saying you're another deity to compel that deity.
Well, in his explanation of that, like, for example, there's spells that are like, I am your son Horus, Isis,
right.
So you need to help me out because you love me, I'm your son. And it's like, well, do we think that Isis is stupid? Is she gonna fall for that?
Right.
Well, fucking of course not. And the reason why that technique works is because in a sense we are all Isis's child. She
right.
is super maternal, not like in an earth mama sense, but she is very motherly. And if you work with Isis or believe in her as a discrete entity, you know, there, part of the way you relate to her is that you see her as a mother figure. So to claim that you are her child, Horus, is kind of a figure of speech, because you are her child in the sense that you are a child of this universe, you
right.
know, and we're all made of universe stuff. And
I wrote this down. He said, they will listen to you as you present, which I thought was meaningful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, back to fake it till you make it. You know?
Right.
And I think also a big part of it is you're trying to convince yourself as well.
Right.
And that's why I say fake it till you make it is a big part of magic is, you know, if I'm like, well, I want a better job or, like, you know, I want a promotion or something. I mean, part of the process of attaining that is, one, admitting to myself that that is what I want.
Mm.
And two, acknowledging and accepting that I deserve that.
Right.
And am gonna take the step to ask the universe to help me actuate that. And I think the result is just those first two steps before you even do the spell are going to help you immensely reach that goal. Because if I'm walking around this office with my head down, my shoulders slumped, I'm not making eye contact with anybody in meetings, I'm not asserting my ownership of work,
ideas,
or effort,
whatever,
or ideas. I'm not putting myself out there as wanting a promotion, of wanting to take on that role, of transition, you know, being a leader, you know, so I'm not putting myself on anyone's radar.
Right.
Now, I mean, there are other factors in the mix, of course, but, you know, if just somebody is choosing between choice A and choice B, and one of those choices is doing a lot of things to make themselves smaller and less obtrusive, they're gonna get less notice.
Right.
Even if on paper your credentials say otherwise. So if you can change that about yourself, if you are presenting in terms of your body language, in terms of your tone of voice, in terms of just the volume of your voice, things like that, then you're going to make yourself more noticeable to the people that have influence over this situation.
Right.
So
same with gods. Yeah.
Yeah. So... I think that's a big part of it. The other thing about the actual physical mask thing that I thought was really interesting is because he was talking a lot about the mask being a technique because it's, you know, if you have problems asserting your own divinity to a god. And I was like, I don't have problems with that. I'm confident.
I'm good.
I'm so confident. I'm good. I don't need a mask. Duh. And I was like... Wait a minute. What the fuck am I talking about? I'm like all glamour magic all the time.
All the time.
So what is yeah, I do this all the time. And it's not, you know, I don't see it as like a prop or like trying to disguise myself.
Right.
I see it as like...
making yourself more compelling.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like presenting aspects of myself or like...
Oh, just like a jewel.
Yes, like a jewel. But, I mean, I'm doing this all the time, you know,
right.
The glamour of, like, my hair, my clothes, my movement, the tone of my voice, my house, the decor.
Right.
You know, actual cosplay, making costumes, makeup, things like that. And, you know, when I do rituals with other people, like, it's a whole production.
Yes.
You know, I, like... have a lighting concept.
Right.
I like arrange the furniture. Like I've got cool looking bits and bobs for everybody to look at. So it feels spooky ooky. You know, I light the incense. So it smells smoky and mysterious. And, you know, like I usually kind of wear something flowy. So I look all witchy woo. And so, you know, and part of it is for me, part of it is for my guests, part of it is for the spirits we're going to invoke, but it's all part of it. And so I just thought it was hilarious that I was like, I don't need masks, whatever. And then I was like, oh,
like,
my God.
I'm like, I am 100% masks. This kind of brings me into, and I think this will be a nice little way to kind of wrap this up. I like that after all of this, after possibly, you know, putting on a mask or not, claiming your own divinity or not, he said, you know, if you make this call, if you make this sorcerous compulsion, respect the subtlety of an answer.
Oh.
And he also said that
I missed that line.
The sorcerer is the questioner, and the questionee.
What?
Shit, did you miss that whole part? Like, yeah. basically saying, like, and to me, like, clearly, like, Jack Grail believes that the gods are very concrete, very real, that their magic manifests in a very real way in your life. But, like, when it all comes down to it, this is all fucking internal, basically. Like, this is all, and I'm not saying, so therefore it is a construct, we do not even need to do this. Of course not. Like, I'm not saying that, but what I am saying is that the answer, only you will hear it. There will be a chance that no one else around you will hear that. No one else can feel like when I get full body chills because of I said a certain phrase a certain way, or I felt something respond in the air to my compulsion. Like, nobody else feels that. Although I will argue that there were times when we were doing magic together and we could all feel it, right? Like, we could feel it in the room.
Yes.
So I think how you internalize what you're feeling, like, that's what you're manifesting. Am I getting too deep? Oh, do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Oh my God.
I know. Can of pennies. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I do know what you mean.
So that really, to me, that like puts a bow on all of the kind of magic that I usually do, because it's all very internal, very introspective. I am not, like, I do not have to have the entire, like, dog and pony show. I don't need, like, I don't usually, when I do something, I'll do a small offering, but I don't necessarily, like, put on a certain clothing or have a certain, like, maybe some incense, but it's usually very small, very private, very, not necessarily not planned, but not, like, out to the detail a certain way. So but I find it all very, I don't know, it's just like it's happening inside me. This sounds dumb.
No, it does not. You saying it sounds dumb sounds dumb.
Okay, it doesn't sound dumb.
No, but I get what you're saying, and I think that, like, ultimately, like, it's all got to come back to this, especially when you're doing ceremonial magic like this, where you're saying things out loud, you're reading things verbatim,
that possibly are 2,000 burning years things. Old. Yeah.
Yeah, and but the important part is, like, you're the one that has to ask the question and hear and feel and interpret the answer.
Right.
And if that's not how you are vetting every step of these processes, then they're not going to work for you. Then you're just pantomiming. It's just theater.
Right. You have to be able to internalize it. And I just love that phrase, respect the subtlety of an answer, because it's not always going to be like, it's just like everything you've been saying about how this type of magic works on a completely different, like, timeline than the magic you're normally used to doing. That's the thing. Like, you have to be, but you acknowledge that it is working, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, I think the subtlety is the key. Like, you have to be, I don't know, I don't want to say expect the unexpected because I hate that fucking phrase, but, like, I guess listen even harder, or, like, pay attention a little more than, or ooh, hello. Ooh. I guess he knows what we're doing.
Listen to this little dude.
Listen to that little
stuff
dude.
To say about,
yes, he does. He's saying it is inside of you. It is.
Thanks, Mr. Herman.
Oh, but, well, I don't want to get too deep into that, but that's kind of what I took from that, is, like, just maybe look for things, just like you've been asked to think about her in a different way, or think about Hecate in a different way than you normally picture her, or her image, or the feelings you get. Almost like to look for an answer, maybe don't look for it in the place that you normally would look. Does that... Yeah.
Yeah. Or look for it in senses that you're not going to necessarily literally hear a voice or see a vision with your actual eyeballs. You know, it's going, it could be more subtle than that. It could be just a shift.
Right.
Or like a sensation in your body or
like a taste.
I can't even, I'm trying to think of examples, but of course, that sort of, the ones bucket. I can think of would be pretty obvious to me. Well, I think Mr. Herman.
I think he's saying we have talked about.
I think he's had the last word on this topic.
I think so too.
He says, you need to listen
to me,
your inner Bork Bork. He is reciting the true name of Hecate.
Yes.
With Bork 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 Bork.
Forbor, Forbora, Borf, 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 Borf.
Thank you, Mr. Herman.
And good night. All right. Well, this was amazing. And I feel, again, like we did some deep diving. So more power to us, motherfucker.
Bark, 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 bark.
Bark, bark, bark. All right. Until next time, everybody.
Hocus pocus, bitches.